On today's episode, episode number 375, entitled How to Heal Your Mind and Body Using Energy, Frequency, and Vibration, I chat with Dr. Caitlin Lehman. Dr. Caitlin Lehman is the Chief Systems Architect and co-founder of Quantum Clinic, an innovative health and wellness center in Los Angeles. Dr. Caitlin uses a range of tools and modalities to help facilitate optimal health and healing in her clients. In today's episode, she dives into a number of these tools and breaks down the science behind how they work, focusing most on the body's energy. If you're wondering how to heal your mind and body using energy, frequency, and vibration, check this episode out now. You're going to love it. So just a quick announcement. Going forward, we will be having 2 to 3 episodes of the Elite Life podcast, a lot more content coming forward. So some of the episodes will be shorter, 2 to 5 minutes long, just quick short ones, maybe a little longer, 10 minutes. And then some of them will be longer like this, an hour long, half hour long. But we are going to be mixing in the content. So some of them be shorter, some be longer, but you will be getting 2 to 3 episodes every single week. That's my promise to you. Got a little thrown off the last couple of weeks because I was traveling and didn't quite have the access to some of the content I wanted to put out, but I'm back on, I'm back home. Had an amazing trip. We talk about it a little bit in the episode with Dr. Caitlin, but I am back and I'm excited going forward to be producing all kinds of content. So 2 to 3 episodes per week. Stay tuned. I hope you enjoy it, as well as follow us on YouTube and TikTok, because we will be posting a ton of other content on those platforms. We're really going to be dialing it up on those two platforms specifically, and Instagram as well, Facebook. Follow us across all platforms, but especially YouTube, our YouTube channel, and TikTok, because that's going to be where you're going to find the most content daily. But that's it for today. I hope you guys enjoy this amazing episode with Dr. Caitlin. I think you will. And stay tuned for more upcoming Elite Life podcast episodes throughout the week. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from Elite Life Podcast. And my guest today is Dr. Caitlin Lehman from quantumclinic.com. Dr. Caitlin, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. I realized after going through your bio, doing a little research, we are very much aligned in a lot of the things we focus on when it comes to wellness, when it comes to health, and even having a trip to Madrid recently. We both had spent some time in Spain, which is pretty cool. What made you go over there, actually, by the way? I didn't ask you that.
Oh, yeah, that was, in college, I studied international relations, and part of my degree required a certain amount of time abroad for completion of that degree. So I went over initially for a semester, and I ended up staying a little over a year. I fell in love with the culture and the language and the people, and I didn't want to come back, but I had to finish college. So,
yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful country, and there's a lot of old, beautiful cities. I actually meant to look it up too, because we've both been to Seville in the cathedral, which is so impressive, massive. It's just a beautiful, like everywhere you look, there's just something new that like sticks out and is so incredible, like the amount of work and dedication and time it takes to build some of these things. But I don't know, do you know offhand how old that cathedral is of Seville?
I actually don't offhand know, but I know one of the things that really struck me about the culture there is the history of and intersection between all of these, you know, different cultures, right? Like the Arabic culture, the Moors, Jewish people, and Spanish Roman influence. So it has like kind of all of those cultural components mixing into the architecture and design in the space. And Sevilla or Seville is really just something to see if you know, the viewers haven't or the listeners haven't been there. You should definitely put it on your list.
Yeah, absolutely. It has I haven't been to Italy, but I've seen in movies and from pictures and friends, and it has a very much a feel of Italy, like a lot of the architecture and stuff. And then of course the Moorish influence and some of the other ones you mentioned as well. So it's a good mix of a lot, but just looking at it, it's probably at least 500 years old, maybe a thousand. It's just like so old and everything. My uncle, by the way, who we stayed with over there is, he's in carpentry. So he builds houses, but the houses over there, they're built out of stone, which is so much more impressive and longstanding than the houses they build here in America, which is, you know, basically wood for the most part. So like these buildings, these houses, these homes will last hundreds of years, maybe even thousands. And it just kind of takes you back to a place of almost how they used to live in a way of being back hundreds of years ago. And it's just something really impressive and cool about that.
Yeah. So I looked it up. It says that it was completed in the early 16th century and is the largest cathedral in the world at the time.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So thanks for looking that up. I was going to, and then I forgot. And then, all right, now I don't have to, but I knew
Wikipedia. Yeah.
I knew it was at least 500, but, all right. So Caitlin, you have a good mixture of a lot of different things in your background and clinical psychologist by trade, but you also do a lot of things that I think most psychologists don't do, which is some of the energy stuff and the vibrational work. Can you talk about what it is that you do in terms of that and how you've mixed it into the traditional, you know, teachings of clinical psychology?
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's a great question and a loaded one.
Yeah. That's a lot. There's a few parts to it.
No, it's great. Let's definitely try and unpack it together. So basically the impetus for the way in which I'm working now kind of was born out of the pandemic, right? It was a time in my life where I'd recently become a mother. I was trying to sort of figure out how I wanted to re-enter the workforce. And I knew I didn't necessarily want to go back into a private practice model, you know, where I was practicing talk therapy with individuals kind of one-on-one. I'd also done a lot of other type of work, like more forensic work, things with medical legal cases and people seeking asylum and refugee status. And that was really meaningful for me, but given where we were collectively in our, you know, shared journey of going through this massively traumatic event together as a species, I said to myself, like, is there another way? And how can I create a model for a type of wellness space or wellness center that could serve as like a pilot or an incubator for a new kind of preventative care, right? Something for the mind, body, spirit, and soul. And so that's a little bit about like kind of the how things got started. And then I just kept asking, you know, myself and the universe what wanted to come through, and you know, using my experience in education as both a researcher and a practitioner to kind of, you know, put some existing evidence-based interventions together in one, under one roof, right? So basically what we do is a little bit of coaching and biofeedback therapy, specifically in the area of heart-brain coherence. So that's connecting the heart with the mind. And what that does is it shifts your brainwaves into, you know, deeper and deeper states of relaxation. And then we offer our clients what's called a flotation rest or reduced environmental stimulus therapy with frequency therapy. So we added the layer of sound, and those are Hertz frequencies known to support, you know, regulation of the autonomic nervous system and balancing of the brain hemispheres and stress reduction, relaxation writ large.
That's a lot of cool stuff there. With the regards to the last part with the sound, is it the, I forget what the word, isochronic tones, is that what it is?
So we're using Rife frequencies. So they're, you know, let me put it this way, like we're beginning to understand how sound has the ability to affect matter, right? And it does that, like if you've ever seen those pictures of like, or still pictures or videos of how sound affects water, have you ever seen that? It's called cymatics. Have you ever seen those images?
It sounds familiar.
It sort of creates these elegant geometric shapes in the water.
Like, yeah, I think I have seen this.
Kind of take still pictures of it. And it's like, wow, what is that? Well, that's vibration. That's energy. That's frequency in affecting matter. Right. And so, you know, there's lots of research that's been done on sound and frequencies for the treatment of specific ailments, over the years, but most of this research is tucked away in academic journals or in very, very small kind of elite institutions and programs where they're working only with a very, very specific subset of an individual with a specific disease. And that's kind of, that's, you know, that makes a lot of good sense because that's how, you know, science is conducted, right? Is studying very niche areas. And so we wanted to create like a generalized protocol using frequencies that are, you know, understood to support stress reduction, relaxation, activation of the subtle energetic system. So activation of the chakras, each of the chakras can be measured to have a particular frequency, for instance. And then what are called solfeggio tones or solfeggio frequencies or source tones, things like 432 hertz is one that is really commonly known by a lot of people to be supportive. Yeah.
Okay. That's, I mean, very fascinating stuff. And I think you're right. I think the research is just really starting to come. Like it's, there's been different studies over the years and, you know, scientific journals, but it's kind of hidden. It's kind of unknown. And I think a lot more research is coming out now to show the effects of it, the benefits of it. I think the isochronic tone, I had somebody on the show before, I forget his name, a few years back, but he was talking about isochronic tones and, it's very similar stuff. I think the frequencies are very similar. I think it's called isochronic tones.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. So
it's similar to like binaural beats.
Yeah, exactly. So is a single tone alongside a monaural beat or and binaural beat. Yeah. So absolutely, right? Like different there's lots of different language that can be used to describe this. You know, I like to zoom out a little bit and say like, okay, what's actually going on here? There's an emergent paradigm in which we're understanding our own body's innate ability and desire to be in harmony with itself, right? And to tune itself, so to speak, to its own unique resonant frequency. And it's a departure from existing, you know, more standard biomedical interventions, which involve like taking a pill to alter the biochemistry, right? We're working with bioenergetics. We're working beneath the level of chemistry at more of the level of biophysics or bioenergetics.
So the theory being that the bioenergetics supersedes the biochemistry. When you get the bioenergetics basically down pat, then the biochemistry corrects itself, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, the research is clear that when people are in a state of coherence, when they're connected to the energetic center of their heart and focused on a, you know, positive or life affirming emotion, you know, it's, there are literally hundreds of biomarkers that shift from stress, right, which encodes for disease, to, you know, more optimal, healthy, adaptive, functioning, you know, better health outcomes, right, are associated with these biomarkers. So, yeah, you know, it's, you know, it's not rocket science, but we really think that, you know, it's worthwhile giving it a shot for folks who are in the area, you know, and people really love it. Like, the feedback we get from our customers is that they've never been more relaxed. They get great sleep the night after, sometimes for 2-3 nights in a row. And you kind of come out of these resonance chambers feeling like, oh, wow, what was that? You know? And so we really like to just say, we're here to be supportive companions on the journey. And like, how can we help you, find greater inner peace, through, you know, and relaxation through this process.
Yeah. That's amazing. You're speaking my language here with all this stuff too. I love it. I've been researching this myself for years and just kind of diving into it. And it's amazing. I think more of us have to, you know, people have to spread the message of some of the healing modalities that are out there that are currently do exist that we just, so many people are unaware of. So it's great to have an actual clinical psychologist like you promoting this stuff because it does work. It's just a matter of like, I think figuring out the right dosages, so to speak, and kind of what works and what doesn't work, what frequencies to 432 hertz. Like they even have YouTube videos right now where there's different frequencies. You can just tune them on in the background for a few hours. And
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we like to say that, you know, a lot of this is freely available to the public, but we've sort of put it together in a service that also has the benefits of reducing inflammation and stress, allowing for the release of the neuromusculatures or neuromuscular structure of the neck and spine. Because when you're floating in 1500 pounds of Epsom salt, it removes about 90% of the effect of gravity. If you've ever floated before, it's kind of a special experience. So, you should definitely,
I haven't yet, but it's definitely on my bucket list soon. Something I want to do.
Yeah. I'm sure there's low tank studios in Boston.
Yeah. So what's the key to that? Is that just, getting enough Epsom salt in there to, is it the same thing as a sound, deprivation tank too?
A sensory deprivation tank. Yeah, exactly. Flotation therapy goes by a couple of different names. It's either flotation rest or reduced environmental stimulus therapy or sensory deprivation. For listeners who are not familiar with this, it's been around since the 50s. But it's the idea is basically there are a couple different designs for these spaces, but we went with ones that are really spacious, luxurious, ample environments, 7 feet in length by almost 4 feet in width, or a double occupancy, which is twice as wide. And so it has about a foot and a half of water, which is heated to body temperature, with approximately 1,000 to 1,500 pounds of Epsom salts in there. And because of the heat and the salt dissolving into this water, in the space, it basically, when you get in there, you float in that water. It's like being in the Dead Sea. I think Joe Rogan is sort of famous for saying that the sensory deprivation was one of the most important and influential things for developing his mind. I know some people are, you know, he can be a polarizing figure, but, you know, he certainly is someone who has tried a lot of different things, and, you know, speaks very highly of that type of service. So, yeah, it's kind of a unique thing that, you know, we're all so bombarded with information everywhere we go, left, right, up, down, on the phone, you know, on billboards, you know, everywhere around us, that it's really rare that you actually have a dedicated space where for an hour, you know, the only thing to do is to just rest, right? And again, it has a lot of kind of lasting benefits that can be supportive of people who want to be at their best, right? They say actually the Dodgers and the, I think it's the Cubs, won the World Series, after installing float tanks in their training facilities.
Wow.
'Cause it has both sports performance and recovery benefits, but also the mental training, elements to it.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. I just heard too that this might be a little extreme as far as, you know, sensory deprivation goes, but you probably heard about it too. Microsoft just built like the world's quietest room. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a certain way to measure the sound, and it's like negative, I don't know, I'm making this up, a negative 1,000 decibels or something compared to like the other next in line quietest room. And you can, the only thing you can hear is like your heartbeat and your bodily processes. And the crazy thing is that people can only spend like 5 minutes in this place before they start like going crazy.
That's pretty intense.
So it's like similar to that, but that's obviously very extreme, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. You would be comfortable to spend more than 5 minutes in there. And again, because we have the added benefit of playing the healing hertz frequencies, there is an element of sound, at least in our space.
Okay. That seems a lot more relaxing than.
Yeah. You know, some people are a little freaked out by the idea of just being alone with themselves for an hour, you know?
Yeah. I used to do a hyperbaric oxygen chamber therapy. I did like 40 sessions.
Wow.
Actually, yeah, well, I did a lot, not quite 40, but a little less than that. But that was kind of creepy. You know, you're in a chamber, sealed steel chamber for an hour, and, you know, you're by yourself, you can't hear anything. And God forbid someone forgets you're in there. It's like, it can kind of play with your mind a little bit. So that took a little bit of conditioning to get over, but it was very healing in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I've heard wonderful things about that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's very healing to, you know, cause it pushes the oxygen to the deepest parts of your cells that, you know, ordinarily can't, get the oxygen into. So, you know, oxygen heals, the cells get the blood they need and neurons and such are created that wouldn't be created otherwise. But what do people think, Dr. Caitlin, when like some of the more traditional psychologists or even therapists, like psychotherapists, if you interact with them, what do some of the more traditional ones think when you talk about some of this work you're doing now?
Oh yeah. I mean, the result from people in my profession is pretty overwhelmingly positive. You know, I think during the pandemic, we all looked around at one another, you know, and said, holy shit, you know, what are we doing here? Right. And traditional modes of therapy, right. Talk therapy haven't really evolved, you know, in like 100 years. Sure, there's a difference between how Freud talked about psychotherapy and how, you know, modern cognitive behavioral therapists talk about it. But what I really wanted to ask myself was, is there actually a way where we can kind of bypass cognitive models of stress reduction altogether? Because there's this real challenge in working with people to reduce stress, that stress is a subjectively experienced reality, right? You can expose two people to the same stressor and they will have completely different subjective experiences of that stress, right? So it's something that's subjectively experienced by the individual or by the community, right? Sure, you could measure cortisol levels, right, to see whether or not objectively, right, there is a stress response occurring in the individual. But even still, there's a wide range of variability when it comes to how we internalize and respond to stressful situations. In the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder, for instance, right, this is a huge nationwide problem for military veterans across the country. My business partner herself is a Navy veteran. And there are some studies coming out actually that are sort of in the paradigm of healing through coherence and understanding energy, frequency, and vibration, for instance, where they take somebody who has a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder and put them near a hive of bees, okay? And the hive of bees actually resonates at a particular frequency, that 432 hertz, I believe. And as they're just simply exposed to that frequency of the bees, their stress response reduces and their symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder reduce, right? So that's some people may laugh and say that's hogwash, but you know, okay. So there's one scientific study demonstrating that. And, I think there's an appetite, collectively to be exploring kind of new models or new ways to be working with people who have adverse, impacts to stressful events in their life. A lot of people are going to psilocybin or LSD therapy or those types of thing. And that's fine. But we wanted to see if there was like perhaps a non-pharmacological way in which we could kind of simulate that healing effect using sound.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So far, it's good. Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that study too. I mean, I've heard similar things like that too. Being around kids or even just someone with good energy, another person with really good energy can bring your energy up. And I mean, we all kind of know this intuitively, like when we're around good people, we feel better.
Totally.
But I think it's actually coming also from an energetic level of transference.
Yes. As a matter of fact, that is something that is very much a topic of research at the HeartMath Institute, which is sort of our research partner that we you know, work with. We sell their biofeedback sensor, and all of our clinicians are trained in the HeartMath system. They talk about you can actually measure and feel the energy of the heart up to 5 to 7 feet away from the body. And, you know, that information is communicating constantly. You and I actually across the country, through our attention and intention to connect with one another, are able to feel one another's energetic and embodied experience. We're resonant beings. We're humans who are deeply connected to that intuitive knowledge. We just don't fully understand it yet in the way that, you know, scientists like to think.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And we're learning more and more about the energy and how it all works, and you know, our connection to everything. I don't know if you've had anything similar, but I've mentioned this too. I've had Dr. Dean Radin on the show before. You know who he is?
I'm not familiar with him, but I'm going to look him up.
He's one of the guys who's most prominent in actually researching and showing evidence of like
parapsychology,
supernatural things.
Yeah.
Like essentially something that I get, and I've talked to him about it too, but it's like, I haven't thought of somebody in years or whatever. Like I haven't many, you know,
Call you.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden they pop into my head, and then within 24 hours, I'll either see that person, they'll call me, I'll get a text from them. And it's like, I don't get it like all the time, but I get it regularly, like every month, every couple months I'll have this thing. And it's like, I can't explain that. Dean couldn't explain that when I had him, but he's had so much research and evidence of people having similar phenomenon. I think he calls it precognition.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same thing of like when you're driving and it's like you just have a sudden urge to like stop your car and stop driving because for whatever reason, you know, you don't know why, but you just stop. And then, you know, 10 seconds later, it comes barreling, you know, a truck comes barreling down. You would have got creamed. It's like this, there's something that's kind of out there that we can't explain. That's all connecting.
Well, I don't necessarily have the full answer, but I could try to talk about that a little bit if you wanted me to.
Oh yeah. It's one of my favorite topics.
Yeah. So there's an emergent model of unified physics that's coming on the scene, which basically, revolutionizes our understanding of self in relationship to the universe, right? And so you can look this up at resonancescience.org if you'd like in the future. But they're beginning to be able to quantify the unified field in a way that previously we could not, right? Because there's sort of this split between our understanding of quantum physics and our understanding of sort of classical or Newtonian physics. And so there's an emergent model that's starting to come through, which is essentially unifying this split, right? And so our innate embeddedness in that unified field is a part of our genetic makeup. It is who we are, right? There's a study that I actually saw on a Netflix documentary a couple years ago where this one scientist was super interested in why these birds were leaving their nesting ground in the Carolinas to go, you know, migrate south to Brazil months earlier than would be appropriate for them for the survival of their young, right? And they, over a series of years, were able to figure out that somehow the birds had this precognizance or awareness of the fact that there would be an intense hurricane season in the Atlantic that would otherwise jeopardize their cross. So they had to leave, and they sort of knew it, right? It's not like the birds are having thoughts, like thinking like, oh, well, we have to go because in the future there's going to be a hurricane. It's a part of their essence. It's who they are. And we are the same, right? We are that as well. And so in this unified model of physics that's coming out. Basically, I'm gonna get a little embarrassed as I'm talking about this because I'm not a physicist. I'm a psychologist, right?
It's all right, yeah.
But basically, at the center of every atom is a mini teeny black hole. And you could think of black holes not as these like life destroying things, but the givers of life. And that, so it's a fractal and a holographic reality that we are innately a part of and providing feedback to. So for the example of you like coming up to a street and having the instinct to stop and put on your brakes, and if you had kept going, you would have been pummeled. You're a part of that field. So even though you weren't consciously aware of the fact that there was a truck barreling down the road, the information within you was, right? Because there's a relationship between all of that information. Everything is energy, frequency, and vibration. Matter has never been proven to exist. Because the more and more you zoom in, the more and more space there is. We are 99.9% space, and space is not empty. It's full of information. So if you're able to kind of begin to embody that for yourself and tap into it, your perspective can begin to shift, and you may notice, increased synchronicities, spontaneous healings, all sorts of extrasensory or parapsychological phenomenon, for those who are interested in that stuff.
This is great. I love this. I think in the next, 50 to 100 years, our view on reality is just going to be completely shattered and almost flipped upside down, but in a good way.
Like, I think it's sooner than later. I think it's sooner than 50 years. Within the next, 7 to 10 years, I think we're going to all just be like, what?
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny though, but seeing people who don't, who aren't open-minded enough, like a lot, I hate calling people out, but criticizing, some top people, but people like the Neil deGrasse Tysons of the world, it's just like, he's so stuck in sort of the Newtonian concept of physics and science. And he's clearly a brilliant guy, way smarter than I am, intelligence quotient wise. I mean, the guy's brilliant, but it's like, he's so close-minded that he can't even grasp or conceive some of the ideas you've just presented on the show and some of the other ones out there. And it's like, it's tough to see people like that who are so brilliant but close-minded, kind of get left behind as new information is coming out, and some of these new, and they'll kind of just kind of, think of excuses for why, this is true or that, but it's sad to see that in a way, but it's also refreshing to see some of the other people out there who are, really on the forefront of some of this information. And I think you're right. It probably is sooner rather than later that the whole science and, academia is going to be flipped upside down because of all the, even like UFOs, for instance, and some of the things that the US government 2-3 years ago actually admitted that they're real.
Oh yeah. 100%.
For 50 years, 70 years, everyone was called a nut, whoever had an experience with one.
I know.
What I mean?
Really sad.
It is kind of sad, but it's also good now that we have all this information, video evidence, testimony, like people are coming out, generals and Navy experts and pilots that are all coming out proving that this stuff really is true, and that, what we thought was impossible actually is quite possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Gravity control is next, baby.
Yeah. What's that?
Gravity control is next.
How's that? What do you mean?
Well, that's the we now have a pretty good understanding of electromagnetic fields and the things that I talk about and work with my clients, that's pretty well empirically validated and understood. And the next sort of big leap, as far as I understand, is understanding gravity in that and being able to have, access to free energy and to be able to get ourselves off the planet without using, rockets.
Yeah, in the tons of gas.
Because we'll be able to, use the energy from the vacuum of space to, which is almost infinite, and to propel ourselves with anti-gravity technology or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you mentioned him earlier, Rogan, he had Bob Lazar on the show who was doing that research like in the late 80s, early 90s. We're talking at least 30 years ago. And he was researching this stuff, but they had already been researching it for decades before him. So it's like they've had access to some of the stuff you're talking about for many decades now.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think that is either they can do it now or it's on the horizon for sure.
Yeah, for sure. A lot. I think, you know, greater transparency and greater, openness and transparency around like what is possible, I think would be great. But you know, there's still a lot of fear around, you know, the old guard, right? Those who, whose careers have been put in the crosshairs because they've been saying some of this stuff to be true for so long. And, you know, they're basically ridiculed and shamed for having those views. And now, you know, this, dare I say, younger generation is like, well, we believe you guys, right? But there's still sort of like a, I don't know, maybe it seems like sometimes a little bit of a power struggle between like how to get this information out there, how to make it more available, how to, you know, bring it to the world.
I agree. And, you know, I think just like in all major industries too, when you have something like free energy, you know, you're talking about big oil and even in the future, big solar, you know, big electrical companies, like they're obviously not going to be happy if energy is entirely free to the world. And so there's probably some forces like that who are holding this information back.
Well, yes and no. Right. And this is where as a psychologist, I step in and say, well, like, but what is a corporation, if not a grouping of people who are motivated around a particular cause? Right. And you know, so there's sure like, you know, not everybody who works for British Petroleum thinks, oh, I'm the enemy, right? Like they think they're doing the right thing by extracting this resource from the earth and continuing to, you know, bring it to market. They genuinely believe that. Those people that work there genuinely believe that their life is in service to something that we need, right? And so how do you speak to those people? How do you have a conversation with, you know, like oil and gas engineers around, you know, what else is possible, right? When there's certainly, it seems quite difficult, like a David and Goliath situation to undo all of the billions and billions of dollars that are invested in, you know, oil and gas infrastructure around the globe, but why not? Right? Like we all live here, you know, we all have to like raise our children here and hopefully our grandchildren will be able to live on this planet and their children. I mean, it's not entirely clear that that's the case right now. So like, wake up folks, you know, just because you work for BP doesn't make you immune to what's going on the planet. And I think we are, you know, potentially approaching a tipping point where folks are saying like, oh, right. You know, I am a contributing participant in this system. And, you know, how can I maybe think about this a little differently?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. But I guess I have a little more skepticism that some of the people on top of these big corporations have the same good heart as you and I.
Well, I don't know. And again, like maybe this is my bias, right? But like the CEO of British Petroleum is a guy named Bernard Looney. And you know, he's a graduate of Stanford and, you know, he's got this big old smile. He's just a normal guy. Like he's just a normal guy. He probably loves his kids. And if he has grandkids, his grandkids, like just as much as anybody else. And I really believe that people in those positions of power, you know, certainly his decision-making framework, if I were to project myself into his shoes, his decision-making framework is rooted in the assumptions, beliefs, and biases of having worked in oil and gas his entire life, right? And he's not naive. He's not stupid. He understands where we are, but how do you turn the Titanic, right? How do you do that? Well, yeah. You know, managing, the demands of the investment cycle or the investors and, you know, stock prices and all of that. So there is no easy answer to this, right? To any of these problems that we face collectively. But certainly I think, I didn't think I was going to start talking like this today.
Yeah, this is great. it's such an interesting conversation though, really. This is great.
You know, but I really, you know, and call me naive, okay? Yeah. Call me naive. But I really do believe in the good-hearted nature of most of these people. And I may disagree with their decision-making framework. And I may think that they're perhaps not taking as drastic of an action as I would deem reasonable in that position, but I'm not in their shoes.
Yeah.
Right. And so who am I to judge? And again, back to this whole notion of like, there's a sort of this knowing, if you will, inside of all of us that something has to give. And, you know, those people who work for those companies, they're people too. And mm-hmm. they're just like you and me.
I really do agree on so many levels with what you're saying. I think, and to that last part there, I think that the people in general working for these companies are all great people, but I think it's more so, at least my skepticism comes from more of like the higher ups, the CEOs, the owner, you know, et cetera.
The board of directors.
Yeah. But I also think that what you said is 100% accurate. I just think that if these people could switch over and still have power, still make the same money by doing something more like with, you know, we talked about the gravity thing and something more aligned with free energy, if they can keep their state of position in the world and their power and their money and their influence and do that and do the greater thing for humanity, they would. But if it weren't guaranteed that they could do that, I don't think they would give up all those things, the influence, the power.
Again, you know, that maybe this is the community-oriented psychologist in me. Power is not a binary construct. It's not me over you. That's like Stone Age shit. You know, power is about a collective, shared ability to achieve. Like, I'm sorry, but we live on this planet, you know, like mm-hmm. wake up, folks. Mm-hmm. There is no paradigm in which we continue to do what we're doing and we have a livable planet. We have to change. So shit or get off the pot, like find another way to make money. If money is your bottom line, I don't have a problem with people making money. There's nothing wrong with money. Money's great, but you can do it in a way that's responsible. You can do it in a way that fits within the existing planetary boundaries of a healthy, thriving, sustainable, biosphere, you know, and again, you know, I am a little bit of a hotshot when it comes to these topics, but
yeah,
you know, whatever.
Well, in your experience, have you seen people be corrupted by money? Have you seen people make poor decisions based off trying to obtain money and doing things that they wouldn't ordinarily
do? I mean, just look at during the pandemic when there was all of this government stimulus for, you know, think of all of the mobile testing sites that popped up. You know, people were money grabbing. When I was during the pandemic, I actually briefly sojourned to your town, although in a digital way, to a Harvard Business Analytics program. And in that program, I was speaking with all sorts of business executives and a variety of different industries about like their experience of things. And, you know, I just kind of approached it like a friendly conversation with people, and people, they would look at me and say, Caitlin, it is really rough out there. Like people are greedy AF and they don't give a flying hoot about, you know, about the well-being of these people. It's a money grab. There's right. all of this money available and people are just taking massive, you know, corrupt actions to be able to get that. And yeah, that, you know, but then the conversation becomes about human nature. And it's like, really, are you trying to say that, what do you believe? Or do you believe humans are fundamentally greedy and it's a scarcity, you know, mentality, or maybe there's enough where we could all share and just fucking get along. I don't, you know, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't think I have the answer, but, I like to believe in the goodness of people.
I do too. I actually do too. As much as I can be, cynical and skeptical at times, I do believe that, I don't think everybody is good, but I think the overwhelming majority of society is good, and that can outweigh the couple of bad apples.
Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, some people, and this kind of goes into spirituality and some of the other topics, metaphysical topics, but I think even bad or evil people, so to speak, have their place in the world. And it's kind of to show us, you know, how to be good. Like, there's a reason for some people to be that way.
Totally.
Yeah, this has turned into a very interesting conversation on many
levels. Good. Yeah, let's keep going. Where to next?
Yeah, so I did want to ask you about the brain, the heart-brain coherence, which you mentioned in the... Actually, first, before I touch on that, is there a difference? Do you do anything between biofeedback and neurofeedback? Is that the exact same thing, or is there a difference there?
So biofeedback is more like more of an umbrella term, and neurofeedback would be like a site specific term. But so we use a biofeedback sensor that goes on the earlobe right over here, clips on, and it actually takes a measure of heart rate variability. And so it was developed by, again, our research partner, heartmath.org. And they do retail this. They have an application that you can use, and you can join different global meditations that they offer. But we sort of chose that measure of coherence, of heart brain coherence, as the basis for our quantitative score. That, you know, every service unit gets a coherence score associated with the note for that session, right? Because we're sort of running it like a preventative care space. So if you're coming in regularly, we can track your coherence, and we can say that your coherence score is improving as you're practicing this, right? Or if you just come in once, you know, then it's a static point. But basically, heart brain coherence is, let me back up. Coherence in physics is defined as a particular degree of correlation between electromagnetic fields. And as HeartMath defines it, it's when your heart and your mind sync up bioenergetically, biophysically. I'm gonna mess it up. There's four ways in which they sync up: energetically, physically, chemically. Anyway, whatever. Because it's more about the experiential piece of it than it is, you know, the science language. But basically, it's we could do it together now if you wanted. Sometimes you can do it with your eyes open or closed. You can put your hand on your heart if you feel so called to. But basically, the exercise is very simple. It's called focus, activate, radiate. So it's focusing on the energetic center of your heart. And doing your best to activate or generate a positive or life-affirming emotion. So this could be the feeling of gratitude or the feeling of love or the feeling of joy. And then we want you to imagine that energy radiating outward from your heart through the rest of your body. Into the space around you. And you can play with that however you like, right? It's not... Again, it's not rocket science, right? It's but it is a very concrete, real skill that you can apply in any situation that dramatically shifts your entire physiology. In a lot of really interesting ways, which I could get into if you want, but it's more about how how it is inside of you than what it does in my experience.
Yeah. How you feel too. And the fact that it can like almost immediately within just a couple of moments, change your whole state of mind and emotional state, attitude. It's really, I actually, now that I think of it, I believe HeartMath was the thing I was using a few years ago. Is it the, like you have an app on your phone and you're like breathing and it like sinks in, makes like these little sounds with like a circle. Yeah. And like when you're doing it right, it kind of like does it more and more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really cool. And it hooks up to your ear.
It shifts your brainwave patterns from stress, which is more erratic brainwaves, beta waves, into more and more what's called sine-like wave patterns. So that's associated with alpha or theta brainwave frequencies. And again, it's heart rate variability is a globally renowned measure of health, but HeartMath seems to have created a power ratio that's calculated based on beats per minute that can produce what's called a coherence score. So the more regular you're able to create that through your breathing and through the focusing on the energy of a positive emotion, that's really where the therapeutic benefit happens, is the shifting of your emotional state from neutrality or from negativity into a positive or life affirming one. And that's, you know, it's really good for you. And it just feels better.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it's the key to a lot of these, you know, experts who do manifesting and creating your reality. I think they all kind of say that.
And working with the quantum field. Yeah. Exactly. Coherence is sort of the foundational basis for all of that. Yeah. Like if you're familiar with Dr. Joe Dispenza's work at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking of.
That's exactly right. This is the sort of foundational technique for that. But, you know, we really wanted to create a space where you could come and learn about this and practice it and experience it and also get the benefits of the flotation therapy and the sound that also sort of helps to support it even at even deeper levels in the body. Yeah.
I don't see how anybody could come to you and not walk away happy after doing some of these things.
Well, we certainly hope that that's the case. And most of our clients do say that they feel really relaxed and you know, LA is sort of famous for our traffic, right? And they're like, I even wasn't even stressed in the traffic when I left, you know? So,
yeah. What do you still do the traditional clinical side of psychology as well on top of this, or have you just kind of let that go?
No, this is it. This is the full-time business right now. Nice. Yeah. I may one day go back and get my license and do, you know, I really like during the Trump administration, I was working with people seeking asylum and exemptions from deportation. So I would like do a lot of interviews with people who were facing deportation and try and, you know, use my knowledge and experience to be able to advocate for them to stay in this country. That was deeply meaningful work and I really enjoyed it. So maybe one day I'll go back to that, but right now this is what I'm enjoying doing. And, you know, I'm sort of an artist and an activist and, you know, I don't know, maybe the fancy word for it is like a polymath, somebody who's sort of interested in all sorts of things. But that's
awesome. Well, you're doing incredible work, Caitlin. And, you know, I think you're changing and affecting a lot of lives in a positive way. So very impressed with what you're doing and keep up the great work. And how can our listeners check out your clinic and your website and what you're up to?
Yeah. If ever you're in Los Angeles, Quantum Clinic USA is our Instagram and Facebook handle. And quantumclinic.com is the website. You can book a service directly on the website. We're open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Awesome. Guys, make sure you check her out. She's doing incredible things. Dr. Caitlin Lehman. Thanks again for coming on, Caitlin. Really do appreciate it.
My pleasure. It was really nice to meet you.
Thank you as well. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care and I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Justin.